Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Fuller part-time options, 518-454-5143. And Rosenbaum Media Group, a digital communications agency integrating high-definition video into PR, marketing, advertising, and social media campaigns. Big-picture thinking for local and national clients. RosenbaumMedia.com. From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
So we're here. Dr. Alan Chartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio, is over there.
And
if you were to look at this studio, you would see that in between here is Ira Fussfeld, a publisher of the Daily Freeman in Kingston, New York.
Nice to see you. You sound awful.
Why,
Please don't take it personally.
I have a little cold. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union. If you didn't recognize the clogged up voice, and the medication I took this morning isn't the right one, so I don't know.
So you may doze off at any time, but how will we be able to tell if you're dozing off because of the medication or the level of discourse?
Or the level of discourse. Yes. It would be most likely the latter.
I was including all three of us in that.
Shall I exclude you from that?
We do the best we can. Yes. Well, what about, while we started off on that point, what about this stuff? How did we, I shouldn't say we, because most of us weren't really, some of us were involved in the coverage. How did the media cover this shutdown and the issues surrounding it? What do we think?
Well, I think that the great risk, Rex, if I may go first, is that when I was reading, I found too much he said, she said stuff. In other words, instead of, as you have often taught us from your high perch, that it's the job of a newspaper, particularly in this time of electronic journalism, to sort of make sense of things for people. I think there was some of that, obviously, by the way the questions were asked. But I really believe that this was a travesty. My personal belief is that the Republicans were holding up the president. And I think that, you know, we reported that the president said that, but there was no sense of verifying the whole thing. I had the feeling that it was nebulous, to put it mildly.
You know, most of the coverage, I think, is defined, like it is with all issues these days, by what we're seeing on cable news. And to a different extent to the talk radio and the conservative talk radio. If you're one of the few who are of the demographic who still watches the network nightly news, which is really an older demographic now, I think that newscasts were even and they were factual and they stated the case and they didn't go overboard. And I think on the cable news networks, within the framework of their news shows, I could say the same thing. The problem is, most of the time on cable news, whichever side of the cable news or CNN allegedly in the middle, it dominated it, and it pretty much dominated with people interviewing themselves and others and the horse race and the clock on the screen. And it just takes on a sense of, oh, I don't know, a crisis that is, you know.
It was a crisis.
It was a crisis. And you know what? Now, this morning, as we speak, all the commentators are saying, we knew the way this was going to end. It was going to go to the 11th hour. Well, if they knew the way it was going to end, why wasn't it reported that way? There's a line between we have to, and the commentators have to state the case and state their opinion, and also state what the potential result of this default would have been, which by most accounts would have been catastrophic.
Well, it already was. The Chinese were checking in, and the international banking system was checking in, and the Raiders were checking in. I want to go back to something Rex said, if I may, for a moment. And that is, Rex said, you know, you said that some of them are, I just want to paraphrase, some of them basically were covering this, not you, but you were, because every day you go into that news meeting and you have to decide, Rex, whether that story is at the top of the page or not. And you've been doing an excellent job, even though it is a newspaper of a region, which is an award-winning newspaper, by the way. You have been playing this pretty dramatically.
It's a hard decision when you do a local newspaper, sure, as Ira and I do, because want to differentiate your product from everything else that people are getting. And so you want to give people the local news that they can't get elsewhere. But when you have a topic that is dominating conversation, as this did in a lot of instances, I think even ordinary folks on the street are talking about that, you need to deal with it. And when you have something that is so vitally important that it needs to be there. But I think there was an effort to distinguish between the positions. Now, I have to say, I don't watch a lot of cable news, so I probably miss that element of coverage that guides a lot of American citizens. But in what I saw of the coverage, there was a sensibility that, and it was stated, that a lot of the Republicans weren't even sure what they were asking for. There was that one quote from a member of Congress about 4 days before the end, 5 days before the end, saying, well, we're going to get something for this. I don't know what it's going to be, but we'll get something for it. And that was exactly depicted, I think, that way by a lot of the, let's say, more thoughtful media, by which I include NPR, newspaper coverage, and so on.
Okay, but by the end, Rex, when we see the results of this, and we see the polls of most Americans, including a lot of Republicans, and they are holding the Republican conference in the House of Representatives responsible, and Ted Cruz, the senator, responsible, how do they know what their position should be? It has to come out of public media. In other words, the way this has got to be, as if you're looking in a mirror, the reflection of what they are reading and hearing and seeing.
I think that's exactly right, which suggests to me that the media, therefore, probably did a good job of covering it. I think you're correct that what this was, really, there was only one side that was saying, we will not act unless. There was only one hostage taker here. And while Speaker Boehner did make his good points of saying, you know, the president will not negotiate, well, the president had said, I will not negotiate, as we know, until you actually do your job. And I think that that got through to the American people, and that is because I think the coverage was pretty good.
Now, as we do this program, the newspapers are making assessments. The cartoonists are making assessments. The newspapers are making assessments. The president won. The Republicans lost. The president won. The Republicans are in disarray right now. And that becomes part of the common knowledge, and people like to be on the winning side. So they say, I'm with the president.
Do you think that's what happened with Newt Gingrich's similar shutdown, that there was so much assessment that they had lost, that in fact then in the midterm elections following the last shutdown that Newt Gingrich led, they did lose. Republicans lost seats.
I know Ira wants to get in on the party.
I'm fascinated.
You want some of my cold medication? You can nod off too.
but if the Gingrich thing cost them Congress, and again, a midterm, we know the president, in a presidency, the midterm election is always a disaster for the president. The Republicans won Clinton, the Republicans won here. But the real question is, how much of an impact does public media play in our memories? I mean, in a year, I would have told you there was no way the Democrats could take back the Congress, the House of Representatives. Now I'm not so sure.
When you say public media, you're not talking about NPR or PBS.
I'm talking about the media, everything.
Okay.
I'm talking about the collective whole.
Okay. But the difference between the Gingrich shutdown and this shutdown is the cable news networks and the conservative channel and the liberal channel and the people who are getting their news, many of whom are getting their news primarily from those two channels, gravitating to their own point of view, as we've discussed here many times, so that there is still a relatively small number of people in this country who believe that the Tea Party and Cruz people did the right thing and they stood up for principle. But they are a sizable enough number around which those people can grab onto and hope that they can expand going forward.
Yeah.
And in 3 months, we're going to be going through this again. But bringing it back to the media, there are people in this country who did not emerge from this crisis saying, isn't it great? We reached consensus. This is the way government should be, which I think was more likely the case in the Gingrich/Clinton era than it is now, where people have only gotten the point of view of Cruz and the hardliners, and it has been reinforced by the Hannitys and the Ann Coulters, and so they're still saying, okay, we lost this one, but we did make some incremental gains, and we're going to continue
the
fight.
But you know,
and that's where I think the media was the influence.
But I can tell you, the morning after, you get Ted Cruz standing up and saying, and being widely reported as saying, we won.
Yeah.
we won. And you have some of the Tea Partiers saying the same thing. But I believe, and this is where Rex and I often disagree, I believe the way that that is reported in the media is telling. So that, yeah, you report what Cruz said, but you make him look like an idiot just by the way you do it.
Huh. Well,
I haven't seen the tabloids, which we often like to make fun of here, but the New York Times headline, the morning after, right across the top of the front page, the first part of the headline was Republicans back down. Uh-huh. Now, I can make an argument that that's accurate. I can also make an argument that that was editorializing.
Huh. Oh, I think any way you cut it, I don't know how else you would say it. Really?
I think that it was it surprised me as a lead headline, and we know how rarely the New York Times goes across the width of the page with a headline. It surprised me that it was in those terms.
So what would have been a better headline?
The Congress reaches agreement, the default is averted.
Well, I think the Times has decided not to be boring anymore.
Well, that could be.
And actually, that reflects Alan's preference that it not be just he said, she said, because that is an analytical, that is an interpretive headline, which I think is an accurate presentation of the news. What about the role of comments, of citizen comments? You know, there's a new study that just came out from the World Association of Newspapers that says that both the best and the worst of online comments tend to arise from politics, that that's where, you know, amid all the topics that are out there, amid Justin Bieber being the biggest tweeter in the world, amid all the stuff about the celebrity lifestyle, it is politics that tends to inspire people's comments.
Well, I believe it. First of all, I think that there's a fairly large number of people out there, here goes Alan getting into terrible trouble, who are nuts. And therefore,
to use the technical term,
who are sitting around and who say the wildest things. You know, I mean, I write a column in the Berkshire Eagle, for example, as well as the Irish paper, the Kingston Freeman, and a number of other places, and they all allow people to go on and say things. Well, you know, if they want to say words like commie and pinko and, you know, okay. But then when they go after your family. You
well,
say,
that shouldn't be allowed. Those should be deleted. This same study.
Shouldn't is a big issue.
Yeah. The same study says that on average, the main press, the newspaper comment moderators delete about 11% of the comments that come in.
I think what heartens me, this is the survey Rex is alluding to, is analyzing these comments, and the New York Times in particular talks about what its rules are.
And they say they let almost everybody through.
But they don't let things that are really objectionable. And
right.
What I'm heartened about is we talked about on this program, it may be as long as 2 years ago when the comment lines were first opening up, and Alan was among those who felt that we were wrong, we meaning newspapers, for just letting everything go up. And I think we, Rex and I, said, in effect, you know, right now we're in the wild, wild west era of this medium, and it's going to change over time. And it is changing over
time.
Right. There are comments that used to have been able to go up no longer get clear.
Well, wait a second.
Newspapers are moderated.
Wait.
Now, maybe not as much as you'd like, but it's much better than it used to be.
Wait a second. You know, you take a look at most of your newsrooms. Now, the New York Times is a specific institution. It has had to get rid of some people and all the rest of it. But if you take a look at your newsrooms, where every desk used to be filled and now every desk isn't filled, let's just put it that way, charitably. Now, Rex has to make a decision. He's got to report budget time, so do you, Ira, and has to ask the following question. What would I rather have, one full-time reporter or one full-time moderator?
Well, nobody said they're full-time moderators, just like everything else.
Well, but these people are on the thing all day long.
Well, depending on the size of the newspaper, it could be. But in our newspaper, and I suspect Rex is a little bit larger, so it's a little bit different, we have one or two people who review the post periodically.
What does that mean, periodically? Let's get right down to it,
I would say in our case, once an hour. How easily once
actually,
an hour.
We don't post anything that's not moderated.
Oh, absolutely not.
So,
right.
And I think Ira's correct that we have just gotten a little bit tougher about it, significantly tougher, actually.
Because of people like me who demand that you get tougher.
Well, no, actually, it's because you find that the people don't want to be in a neighborhood where there's violence.
That's right.
So when you're in a verbal neighborhood like this, where people are writing violent things or nasty things, the smart commentators go away. And so you
let me just try a little thing on you, okay?
All right.
You know, the birthers who say, they're still saying, you know, Obama was born in Kenya. Is that offensive?
That is not.
That's not offensive? We know it's a damn lie.
Well, it may be a lie, but you can let that go into onto people, and that will be corrected by other commenters. What violates your terms of service is if they make nasty personal attacks.
If they use the N-word, if they do that, that's out.
Right. You know, we can't edit. We can only either delete or publish under law so that we are not...
Wait, what law? I'm sorry.
The current case law is under libel law. If we edit... Then we own it, as opposed to if we let it pass it right through, then we, the industry, is in safer territory.
No, I get it. But I'm still offended by the whole thing because I think, you know, he was not born in Kenya. We know it. I mean, policy, all right, policy. You want to talk about global warming. You know, this is just cyclical. It has nothing to do with us. It's just idiocy, but they say it and you let it through. I mean, that's fine as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I think it says something to the readers of the site. If a statement such as the one you just described is posted and it's not nasty, it's just this guy's opinion, despite whatever to the contrary has been out there. It says to me, it's important for me to say that ought to be on my site because these people are in our community.
We need to let people know that. Draw the line, Alan? If we follow your philosophy and we don't allow things that we find to be personally problematic, then what happens if somebody takes a position about fracking that you don't like? Would you not allow that just because you disagree with it? I don't think you would.
No,
sure.
I mean, no, I think these, look, you guys get paid the big bucks. Nobody ever said it's you have easy jobs, you have hard jobs. I mean, I know that. And, you know, there is a debate that's going on about fracking, even though I'm quite sure which side is right. But I would not exclude people on fracking.
By the way, if somebody wrote us a letter to the editor that still denied that Obama was a citizen, we'd probably run that.
Hey, Ira... That person would have to sign their
name
to that letter.
I knew you were going there. Absolutely.
As opposed to these irresponsible guys.
Yes.
As far as I'm concerned, they ought to be crushed like bugs. Yeah. I don't think intellectually.
You know, I actually don't think we would run that. I think that's where we differentiate the print from the blog, because we do prevent publication of things that we know to be untrue. And I think we know to be untrue that the notion that Barack Obama was not born in the United States.
I am going to just simply say one more time that you guys are the biggest hypocrites I have ever seen. On the one hand, you say, oh, we have standards for our letters, but we don't have standards for what any kind of garbage that anybody can throw up there.
That takes me back to where I started, which is we have gone from the wild, wild west to, say, the turn of the 19th century. It's a little bit more civilized than it, and I suspect that it's going to be further refined as we go along, and we may finally reach the point that you want us to be. We seem to be heading in that direction, but we're not there yet.
Well,
it's a lot better as
Pete Seeger sings in the song that you hear before or after this. This is, to me, is a case of prestitution.
How so?
We know. Well, I'll tell you how so.
Yes.
We know exactly why you're doing it, everybody. Don't we, folks, as you're driving along in your cars or listening on your radio? We know why you're doing it. You're doing it to get more readers who say, look at this crazy here. And more people will pick it up and take a look at it that way.
No, I think we're doing it to allow a free exchange of ideas in the community, to give people the opportunity to express their point of view, however objectionable.
However nut fringy.
Nut fringy.
You have a commentator on this station who draws a lot of complaints, and you properly air him because he presents a point of view that is not heard as frequently on this station as the other point of view.
Right.
And you get all sorts of criticism for it, and your answer is that's a point of view that deserves to be heard.
But it's a legitimate point of view.
Isn't there a hope, too, that by having the conservative or other conservatives, that you're going to lure in an audience that may
hell
not be...
no.
Oh, it has nothing to do with audience.
Hell no. It's just a matter of responsibility.
That's right.
Okay, the more responsible news organization is liable to get more people listening and reading.
We don't care about
You know what the name of your company is?
Yes.
Digital First.
Yes.
What do you think that means? Digital first. Get the people. Get them. Hiya, hiya, hiya. Everybody come right in and
attend. It means our attention better be to getting a digital future or else we're not going to be working anymore.
Meet people where they are rather than where their daddies were.
So if the average level of discourse goes down and down and down, like in an elevator, then we have to meet them where they are no matter what.
You're making it all black and white, Alan. It's more nuanced than that. As we have articulated very intelligently.
Typical of you, Rex.
And it's not going down and down. It's going up. It may have started from down, but it's going up. It's getting more intelligent.
If you're just joining us and you don't know where you are.
Now, why would you want to do this? But turn this station off. Nobody wants you to listen
to this. This is the Media Project.
They don't care about listeners.
Northeast Public Radio. Alan Chartok, Ira Fussfeld, and Rex Smith here. We're very sorry. There's an important issue here that we need to address. Federal Appeals Court within the last week has declined to hear an appeal by James Risen, who is a reporter for the New York Times.
Very respectable.
He wrote a book that had to do with intelligence issues, let's say, and he was ordered to testify in the trial of a former CIA official who was accused of leaking information to him. He declined in what seems to me to be inexplicable legal grounds. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit has said that he is going to have to testify. So it is rare. It is an unusual situation. But here we have a reporter who is trying to preserve the reporter-source relationship. There is no federal shield law in place to cover him. And there's the rub.
So this has happened rather, I mean, you say it's rare. It is rare, of course. But it's been happening rather consistently all along. You get a judge. The judge almost always sides against the reporter. If you read the comics, and if you're as old as I am, then Brenda Starr had to do jail time, I believe. She was sitting in a jail cell because of this. We've seen this again and again and again, and it is almost a point of pride for a reporter that they go into a jail.
Oh, no. I don't think any reporter wants to go to jail.
No, they don't want to.
And I think you know about it. You say it almost always happens. It is rare that the case is brought. Usually, prosecutors respect the right of a reporter not to reveal a source.
Why do you think that is? Because they're afraid that
it's like
voting against the new pumper at the town meeting. In the back of your mind, you're a little afraid that when your house catches on fire, they may not be there.
I think it's because there's something called the First Amendment.
Everybody's talking the First Amendment, right? I happen to agree with you that there's a First Amendment. I happen to agree with you about shield laws and the need for them. But on the other hand, I don't think most people intellectually think about that.
They think reporters ought to just not have confidential sources. I understand that's a difficult situation for people to buy. Confidential sources are sometimes essential to getting a story, but people really hate it.
Yeah, we know how much people do not like it when somebody is quoted in a story and it says a source or an anonymous, as is often the case in the coverage of this town in print. I was very surprised, by the way, that the Daily News state columnist, Ken Lovett, who I happen to like his work.
He's terrific.
And he used several anonymous stories.
Now he does.
Yeah, that disappointed me because his competition uses them all the time.
But he got an important story out, by the way, through confidential sources, which is the Cuomo administration's manipulation of a Moreland Act commission.
Yeah.
He broke ground on that, and everybody else has been following him. And it's important because now the Moreland Act has felt its backbone strengthened by sort of being little bit.
I have no doubt you're right. Very quickly, Cuomo establishes a Moreland Act Commission, which he's allowed to do under the Constitution so that he can compete with the legislature and make them, you know, do what they're supposed to do and clean things up.
Compete?
Yeah.
Interesting
Okay.
To investigate wrongdoing,
so he does. Then Ken Lovett, your guy who you're talking about, does the story, very interesting, saying that the governor's office is calling in plays, telling him who to subpoena and who not to subpoena, including some of the people who have given him money.
Yeah.
Well, then the Moreland Act Commission says, well, fooey on you. We're going to just go away and fold the whole tent. And everybody, including me, writes columns saying what's happening. And then finally, the Moreland Act Commission, I'm sure, again, probably hearing from the second floor, says, oh, no, we're really going for it no matter what.
Bear in mind that a lot of these Moreland Act commissioners are elected district attorneys, including significantly the co-chair, Kathleen Rice of Nassau County.
Who thinks she may be governor someday, I suspect.
This could happen. And you don't want her reputation tarnished by rolling over for the governor. So it's a difficult position they've been put in because they are anointed by the governor, but they can't be seen to be. So that's a political analysis, but I think in this case, the press really did its watchdog job well.
And as a result, policy has been changed.
As a result of Ken Lovett using confidential sources.
So that was why I was going back to that. So as an editor, you would feel less conflicted about using that because of the content of the work. But you would also have to be assured that this was not a quote that was made up out of whole.
I would have to know who the source is. That's what our rules are, that you need to tell your editor who your source is.
Yeah. Because the readers are at least skeptical. If not,
rightly so.
Yeah.
Rightly so. They should be skeptical because I think there are instances where there is no real source. But in the good practice of journalism, if you are really working hard, and you have to be as transparent as you can with your readers and tell them as much as you know and no more than that.
And one of these guys, they start to make up sources, you got a problem. And I know one guy who does that.
And on that point, we're going to have to leave it. You have to tune in to see if you can figure out who that might be. So, Ira Fussfeld and Alan Shartok, and I'm Rex Smith. Thanks for joining us on The Media Project.
Boyd Skullduggery, she up and cut her husband's only throat. She chopped him into fragments, she stuffed him in a trunk. She shipped it all back yonder to her uncle in Podunk. Now newspaper men meet such interesting people. It must have startled poor old Sadie's unk. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, city desk. Hold the press, extra, read all about it. It's a mess.